It's that time again. Time for another Encevides podcast. Today, you are going to hear something very special. On today's show, we have not one guest, but two. Both of them are very talented co-directors over at Moonbot Studios. If you don't know Moonbot, they are the animation studio in Shreveport, Louisiana, who won the Academy Award for their short, The Fantastic Flying Books of Morris Lesmore, back in 2011. On top of that, their logo is a robot. Their website has a spaceship. What more could you want? Both of my guests today worked on the Scarecrow video for Chipotle, the one that got a lot of buzz the past few weeks. The animation on that is just gorgeous. We're going to talk about that project, about their Academy Award-winning short, and the company coming up. Now, I just want to take a moment before we get into that, just to make note that one of these gentlemen, Brandon Oldenburg, is not just the founder, one of the co-founders of Moonbot Studios. He's also one of the co-directors on the very short that won the Academy Award. That's right. For the first time, we have on this show an Academy Award winner. Now, that might not be a big deal to you. You might get to see Academy Award winners every day at your dinner parties, at, I don't know, the weekly bingo games, the YMCA, who knows. But it's kind of nice to see it here on the Encevides podcast. So we're going to take a moment just to acknowledge that. Yeah. I think fanfare is in order. So let's see what we can do about that. Doo-doo-doo. Well, yeah, maybe we'll get a better budget for fanfare next time, but you know, you do what you can. You do what you can with the time that you have. Okay, let's get started.
This is the Encevides podcast.
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome to another episode of the Encevides podcast. This is a show where we talk about doing incredible things, imaginative things, and doing those things well with others. I'm really excited about our guests today. They were both involved in the stunning computer animated short of Chipotle, the Scarecrow video that got a lot of buzz. These guys are both at Moonbot Studios. We have with us today Limbert Fabian and Brandon Oldenburg. Welcome to the podcast, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, so I was thinking that we would start off talking about Moonbot a little bit. We'll touch on Fantastic Flying Books briefly and then dive into Scarecrow, if that's okay.
Certainly.
Unless you all are dead set against that. We're like, we will not do that.
Yeah, we hate talking about ourselves.
Okay, so how about this? And I also thought of a challenge. So you have an option to accept or decline, totally up to you. But here's the challenge. Because this episode will air around Halloween, and because I've noticed that Moonbot Studios likes to reference all kinds of literature and classic films, the challenge is, at some point in the podcast, find a way to reference either William Shakespeare or classic monster films. All right, how you do that, totally up to you. But, you know, if you're interested, that's the challenge, all right?
Et tu, Brute.
Yes, yes, nicely done. off to the races we go. So, I have to say, Moonbot Studios strikes me as a cultural treasure for Louisiana. And I don't say that lightly, right? I mean, there's so much richness here. There's the birthplace of jazz, the home of Louis Armstrong, and let's not forget LSU and the Saints, right? But you all have this presence, and it seems like all the things you do have this personality. Like, you see it and you say, yeah, that's got that Moonbot feel to it. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that. What is
part of the magic that has that Moonbot special flair to it, if you will.
I want to say one thing. I think Brandon's going to jump in here, but I wanted to say that the reason Moonbot is special is because we believe in magic.
We do believe in it. Magic is real. There is something incredibly enticing about the South, specifically this state that we are in. And it's such an interesting mixture of all these different cultures, which is the gumbo or whatever. And when we approach any of our creative projects, there's a similar sort of recipe, meaning we take the things we love and throw them into a pot together and hope for the best. And when we approached, let's say, our first project at the studio, Morse Lessmore, it was just that. It was a combination of all these ingredients that were rooted in a deep emotional sort of state, whether it was from a previous relationships of mentors or literature we loved, or an experience we've all recently gone through, whether it was related to displacement from homes or loss of close friends or family. And when you have something that's, the ingredients are so rooted in such an emotional sort of state, you can't help but make something that at least has heart. Whether it's approachable or not to a mass audience, that's a whole other thing. And whether it, it tastes good to a mass audience is a whole other thing.
Every sort of step along the way, we've trusted our gut on the things that we were making. And there's something valuable there, the idea that, this just feels right to us. And hopefully people will catch on to it or sort of like it as much as we do. But we always try to operate under that idea that just try to trust your instinct here.
And the other thing is that we make sure we have fun while doing it, which also taps into the culture here. I don't know if you witnessed it firsthand.
Yeah, I saw the studio tour. That seems like quite the setup. And you'll even have that giant lamp that is intriguing that people turn on and off, right?
Right, exactly. From a design aesthetic, we have certain artists we love, and Magritte is definitely one of them. And the realism to what Magritte does has obviously been, played a role in maybe our surroundings.
Yeah, that makes sense now that you say it.
Yeah.
Another thing that strikes me about the kind of things you all do, you don't rehash something even for the game side, right? For some of the games, when they're tied to a big release, it's like, all right, we'll just take the movie elements and repackage in a game. But it seems like you all put some tender, loving care into getting the details right for the game experience or the book experience.
That's wonderful that you're catching on to that, because that is really important to us with all the projects. It's almost like each of those media sort of outlets are almost one up on their own. We try to treat them that way because they're important. It can't be just a rehash of the assets and sort of porting them along the way just because you have to play in that arena. It's important for us to really learn something about that unique outlet itself and play within that space and learn something from that. I think that's what's important to us, and hopefully we'll keep doing that with everything we do. We plan on it, but that's from day one. It's always been something that we love.
We try to keep our 5-year-old selves or 7-year-old selves in check. And we always think back to when we experienced something like a narrative, whether it came in the form of a movie and then a book and then bed sheets or whatever, that, we want to make sure there's meaning and a logical sort of side story that can give meaning to the reason why you decided to do a game or you decided to do a book and not have it happen again. There were a couple of times when we were kids where, like, for example, Star Wars started to put out toys. And the first lightsaber that came out was horrible. It was like you might as well have been flailing around like a balloon that wasn't even well inflated. So it was like you would try to bang your swords together and nothing would happen. They would just sort of flop. And it's like, okay, this
lightsaber.
And it was a flashlight and it didn't even make a noise. It's like now, they make these great lightsabers, of course. And it really feels like there's a lot of thought and care that went into the connection between the narrative and the product. But when we tackle a book, we want to make sure that it certainly can serve as a standalone, but then it only sort of enhances the whole world building experience.
Sure, yeah. And that seems evident. I mean, even in the website with the spaceship and the robot and everything, I mean, that's pretty much all it takes to get me interested, right? Spaceship, robot, icon. All right, I'm in.
Yeah. You want to make sure that at the end of the day, those who are creating outside of consuming we're all going to live with it a long time. We want to make sure that there's enough there to latch onto and live with.
Okay. Well, one more question about the studio. I noticed that you all do Sketch Tuesdays. Is that something company-wide where everyone just sketches for a certain amount of time or just throughout the week submit something?
Recently, it's been we've been doing challenges where we pick a topic, but I think it's open to whatever you've got going on during the week.
I think it also speaks to the culture of the company. We have a sketchbook-like culture where many of us came from art school, or even prior to that, just we all kept and maintained our own journals and sketchbooks. So within your own personal journals, you have nuggets of ideas that eventually will turn into stories eventually in one way or another. And, you know, we value the creative opinions of all of our employees and encourage it. So you have to keep your muscles flexed, whether it's through just life drawing or just the exercise of inspiration, of finding new things that you love, because eventually it will play its way and find its way into a narrative you're building, whether you like it or not.
Okay, great. So let's talk a little bit about Fantastic Flying Books of Morris Lessmore. I believe that was your first venture into an animated short, right?
For our new studio, certainly, yes.
Yeah, and right away you all got the Oscar. That's very impressive to get that right from the beginning.
Yeah, it was crazy. We sort of alluded to telling our investors and those who are believing in our company early on that, you know, trust in us, we're going to build a rocket ship and on our first go land on the moon and then return safely home. And it was completely absurd and ridiculous to think that we could do that. But we'd all been working very hard for over 2 decades in all of our various fields, whether live action or animated features or children's books. I think it was just the right moment for us to finally kind of get our own story out into the world. And we were so fortunate that the world embraced it. But at the same time, it was always the goal to just build it and hopefully they will come. Hopefully people will like what we're doing. And it was affirming because there's that point in your career where you go, are we just completely delusional and just think that, you know, I mean, are we just wasting everybody's time here? Do we need to switch vocations? But it happened at the right moment for us. And it certainly, you need to be able to be put on the map when you're so far off the map like we are.
Yeah, definitely. And on that note, I was glad to see the line that you all have at the end that says the film was created entirely in the state of Louisiana. Nice to see that Louisiana pride. It feels to me that the short is similar to Beast of the Southern Wild in that it's not just made in Louisiana, but it's also at its core about the Louisiana experience.
Yeah.
Do you think that's valid?
Yes. You can't help but allow things that happen around you to find their way into your story. And the best stories are the ones that are the most relevant to you. Those are the ones that you should tell. And for us, Morris Lessmore really was the right story, the right first story for our studio to tell. Because, of course, we needed the support of our state and our city. And we needed to also sort of pave the way for our mission statement for our whole company, which is every story matters, every story is worth telling. And to make a storytelling company and to have the first project be a love letter to story just felt right.
Yeah, and it's set in Louisiana, in New Orleans, right?
That's right.
So for those who don't know, the story involves Morris at the beginning, who is into books, and some kind of a storm happens. Maybe it's a tornado, maybe it's a hurricane, maybe even a tempest, you might say.
Yeah.
But it takes him to this other world.
You get a point.
Yes, I threw it in there. Yes. But it was interesting to me because it seems like it has a lot of rich ideas in it, right? I mean, where is he? Is he in purgatory? Is it a dream? What's going on? And this is what I took from it. Maybe I'm completely way off base, but it seems like the short was about how sometimes we can take a fall in our lives and we need help getting back up. And sometimes books or films can help us find enjoyment again. At least that's what I got out of it.
Oh, that's awesome. And it's, you know, what's wonderful about the medium of shorts is that, especially if you choose to do it without any sort of dialogue, that it allows for many different interpretations. But the story at its core is about the curative power of storytelling. and every story is worth telling, and is certainly something that we witnessed firsthand by allowing those who had experienced such a traumatic experience to be able to then communicate with others what they had gone through. There was a specific exhibit that was on display and that was organized by my partner William Joyce here, as well as the Arts Council. It's called Faces of Katrina. And those who were in shelters here in Shreveport and other cities further north from the coast were encouraged to talk about what had happened to them. And then there were photos documenting portrait photos of the people who had gone through these stories. And it was just their faces in black and white plastered on the walls, very large, along with a paragraph about what they had gone through. And there was a transformative change that happened on these people as they were even beginning to tell their story. But then once the exhibit was up and then other people came through, you could sense that it was a healing process for many to be able to read and learn from other people. Because if you've had everything erased, where do you start? How do you pick up the pieces? And I think a starting point for many is the inspiration that comes through another story. So, you know, if they can do it, I can. If they can pick up the pieces and start writing new chapters in their lives, maybe I can do that too.
Yeah, and it seems like there are lots of references in that setup as well. I mean, there's Wizard of Oz, which seems pretty clear, and also Buster Keaton, right?
Sure.
Yeah, it was interesting, some of the little details that you put in. One of the things that was amusing to me was when we first see Morris, he's writing something like, why does it matter if the weasel goes pop, right? And it's right next to a jack-in-the-box. Mm-hmm. And at the end, he writes a reply to that, which is, if life is enjoyed, does it have to make sense? But it was interesting that it was like an existential question to something maybe seemingly trivial, but then you all tied it in with the jack-in-the-box music, that little theme that
right.
I heard.
Right.
So fascinating. Again, is that anywhere close to what you all were intending? Or is that like, no, actually, that means nothing. Where do you get these ideas?
So the existential thing is awesome. And then, it goes back to a magical thing that happens in these ingredients. It just feels right, whether there is a true logical connection or not. It just felt right. And to be able to take something that was as trivial as a silly nursery rhyme and to twist it on its head and turn it into a symphonic score that really kind of like just sort of like grabs you at your heart. That was something that, you know, we have to give credit to our composer, John Hunter, who really took these crazy asinine ideas and then to be able to make a theme out of it and then to recreate the theme in so many different levels of emotion and tonalities to where it didn't get old was an amazing feat on his part.
And I really loved the Humpty Dumpty character as a book. That was genius. How did that character come about?
Well, that was difficult. You know, the idea was like, well, cool, yeah, an illustration on a book. And then, of course, it would move if the pages flipped like a flip book. But to actually pull that off virtually in the computer to make a fake flip book or a CGI flip book is incredibly challenging. But what's awesome about that is it requires all forms of animation. There's the traditional 2D animation that's going into it. There is the miniature animation of like stop motion of the environment that we're putting the character into. And then third, there's the CG animation of the book. The biggest challenge was how to balance the performance. And the best analogy I can come up with is when we figured out that it was a rider on a horse, because the book is alive as well as the character on the book. So Humpty is the rider and the book is the horse in a way, and how we approach the performance for Humpty. Because they were at one point early in our tests, they were definitely competing. We had them both dancing and it just didn't feel right.
Is it my imagination or was Humpty reenacting scenes of Romeo and Juliet at one point in the book?
Oh, yes. Another point.
Okay. All right. Yes.
Yes. And then if you happen to download the app, the More Slow More app, there's a Easter egg in there where you can watch the whole sequence, which our animator Jamil at the time put together, and it was really kind of lost in the film. It's just very subtle, but yeah, Humpty's acting out both genders in a sequence.
Yes.
Again, it's those little touches that make it so special, and some of them I didn't even notice until the second or third viewing, but it's details like that. It's the zoetrope kind of effect where you see Morris as if you're seeing him through a zoetrope. And then there's the nod to the flipbook animations.
Yeah.
the rise of classic cinema, of silent cinema. So yeah. it's neat to see you all take all these things that you clearly have a passion for and put them into a story that has a lot of resonance and that deals with some pretty tough issue.
Certainly.
So again, nicely done. Way to knock it out of the park right from the beginning.
Thank you.
All right, so let's talk about Scarecrow.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I have to say how surprising that was. I mean, it's 3 minutes, 23 seconds, and that's like 6 times longer than the typical fast food spot. And all of it seems to me like, you know, grade A feature film quality animation. It doesn't feel like, oh, well, this is the commercial level animation that you see sometimes.
Yeah.
So did you know from the beginning that it would have that kind of scope?
Yeah, you know, from the beginning, first of all, I don't think we ever set out to make a commercial from day one. It was always meant to be an experience, something that felt like it was telling a story that communicated the ideas that Chipotle cared about in their brief. But for us as a production company and as creators and as storytellers, it was never, this is going to be a spot, so we got to cut corners here, and this is going to look this way, because it's, you know, again, it's only going to be 30 seconds or whatever. Or even a minute, you know, a 6-second spot is a lot of time to tell, but we never intended to go out and shorten the experience in the storytelling or the way we were crafting it. We wanted to make it as lush as we could within the parameters of time, because, you know, production. You know, that's the one thing about commercial production, is always sort of this pressure of time. There's a deadline to meet. And both Brandon and I have this background in commercial work ourselves, and we were thinking that way. We were sort of aware of that, but we knew that we didn't want to shortchange anything. So we were lucky enough to have a partner in Chipotle that they allowed us to keep pushing the limits and exploring where we need to go and let the story breathe and develop along the way.
I read another interview that you all did, and you said, "We've never had a client like this ever be so collaborative." And what a great compliment that is. That speaks well for Chipotle and the whole experience. How did you all develop the trust to have that kind of collaboration?
Yeah, they were fantastic. TA Marketing sort of was the matchmaking entity here, if you will. But once we got talking, I think Chipotle was really smart about the fact that they had this brief. They wanted to engage the public in a conversation about, hey, take a look at what's going on behind production and engage in a conversation about that, not pointing specifically to, hey, this is how we do things, but rather how things are going on in general. And that was the brief. Anything we pointed to, they would tie us back to that message and say, well, at its simplicity, guys, this is what this is about. This isn't about selling burritos. This isn't about, you know, our specific brand, but our brand is this conversation. And that was very liberating. So every note we got on the story were dead on. There was nothing the client said that we were just like, what? Every sort of creative discussion note that they would bring up was, gosh, actually, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that does work. And thank you for pulling that out. I mean, I think that was really helpful. And they were really engaged as creative individuals as well, which is really wonderful to have.
You were also great about pushing a deadline to make sure that the story was right. And we never really had a locked deadline for a long period of time, which was very helpful. But you have to have deadlines to get anything done. But they weren't going to release it into the world until it was right, which is a great approach. You know, you got to make sure, you know, because your first foot forward with a narrative like this is your last, and you got to make sure it's the right foot forward.
Absolutely. And most of the time, a lot of commercials, there's purchase time, right? There's a slot that needs to be filled, and we've got to get this out, and we've got this much time to do it. And I mean, some great things. I mean, there's great work that happens in that under those constraints. But with this client, again, we were fortunate enough to go, well, you know, we can push. Let's make this right. Let's not rush this, and let's give each part of this experience that its due time.
Yeah, and once again, just like More is Less More, it's a short, very much about an idea or ideas. And that's really refreshing to see. Limbert, I was curious, your work on Freshworks, was that a factor in you being involved as a co-director? Because that was a similar kind of message for that piece, right?
Freshworks campaign, it was similar. That was just coincidence, honestly. Brandon and I have been friends for a very long time, since college. And he and I worked together at a company before Moonbot. And in a way, I feel like I've been part of Moonbot for just as long as Brandon has been emotionally and mentally. So the beginning of actually the beginning of this project, the guys invited me to actually yes forced me to come join them. No, it was wonderful. They said you got to come visit. I was
you got to do it.
You got to come and say hello and see what we're up to. And it was a no brainer. I needed to be here. But that was actually the beginning of the conversation with TA and Chipotle was when I got involved. And
that's right.
And so again, I think it's always been there.
Certainly for our company to grow, we obviously need to align ourselves with other creative directors like Limbert to be able to multitask all of these various sort of mediums that we're diving into, whether it's really meaningful narrative exploration with clients or it's our own narrative exploration through books or games, apps or whatever. William Joyce and myself, we certainly can't do it on our own. We need others as well. And even our art director, Joe Bloom, who was sick and couldn't make the call today, he plays a major role now in the future of creative direction in our company and is co-directing a Edgar Allan Poe short film.
Oh, neat. That would be quite the thing to see.
Yeah, and we have two Edgar Allan Poe shorts that are in production as we speak, which is timely. With
Halloween.
Yeah, right. Certainly. So for Limbert and I to be co-directing The Raven at the moment is a blast, and it's also a nice change of pace for us. I mean, certainly we have an understanding of black birds and how to deal with them, but we've just recently discovered that there's this motif right now of black birds and everything we've collaborated on, which is very
odd. It's really odd. I didn't know.
There you go. Yeah. You know, I was actually thinking of The Raven when I was watching The Scarecrow, because it's almost like those birds have this ominous supernatural feel. Beware, you know, that kind of thing.
Definitely.
So that was intriguing.
Right, because Tippi Hedren, you're always wondering, like, what was her character? What has she done to have all these birds following her around? You know, it's like, what's going on?
There you go. You guys get points for that. I think we'll give you points for The Raven as well, because, you know, that counts.
It's in the holidays.
Yes.
Really
yes.
But, you know, it makes sense.
All right. So you all have a tendency to do several different types of animation. We saw it in Morris Lesmore. And once again, here you're using computer animation and also miniatures and 2D. I imagine that adds a little bit of time to the project, right? I mean, wouldn't it be faster to just do everything in 3D?
Well, it's kind of an interesting thing. Like, it's actually, we think of it the other way. We love not being locked in on one medium. There's so many studios out there that have sort of an intentional decision they've made to have the purity of their projects be specifically one consistent medium. But sometimes it makes more sense to have multiples for cost-effective reasons. And back when we were approaching the Flying Books, we chose to build miniatures and shoot miniatures because we didn't even at the time have a CGI team built in-house. We hadn't even hired the people. We hadn't even met the people that were going to become part of the culture of this company to do that. We just knew that we liked working with our hands and that we wanted a very natural, handmade approach to the look. So we just dove head first and started, you know, going back to our roots as children and started making little dioramas. The same thing was in the line here with Chipotle. We wanted to make sure that we drew the line between sterile and clean and perfection, or in air quotes, perfection, which is what the crow world is like. In comparison and juxtaposed to the scarecrow world, which is more handmade and natural and approachable.
Yeah, so it served as, you know, as a intention, and we planned it that way.
It's a gorgeous look. It was just surprising to hear you say that it was also a cost-effective way, because it does give it that nice texture that it's not all polished CG. It does seem like on the animation side, studios are either one or the other. It's either Pixar or maybe Leica doing stop motion, where they build almost everything. So I really like that hybrid approach.
We're huge fans of both.
They're both terrific.
Yeah, we love those companies so much that we can't help but have a little bit of that DNA infused in what we do, but it's a mixture of all of those things.
So I believe this short took over 2 years, right?
While juggling a bunch of other things. But everybody wanted to make sure the story, we got it right. And so the majority of time was just spent on pen and paper, you know,
just
getting the boards
right.
getting the story right.
And then, of course, so we know that there's three components to the project, if you include the music discussion that went on. But again, so to that point of not having each piece feel like it's just a rip off of the other and sort of re-import it to something else, we wanted to give the game its due time and development process and take that down the road it needed to go down.
We chose this theme of, you know, with Chipotle's direction of cultivate a better world, and we wanted to make sure that that was something that you could physically witness in the game experience. One thing that was really important to us is that where the story leaves off, you pick up in the game. So they literally just sort of right after you watched it, you just dive right into the narrative and become the next Scarecrow inspired by the actions of the first.
Yeah, so exactly for us, it was like what happens next was the motivating sort of driving force for the game, as opposed to let's play the world of the Scarecrow. It always was intended as, okay, what happens next after that first piece of food is served and where do we go from there? So if you watch the film, as the camera pulls back and it goes out to show you the island of the game, there are two little scarecrows that are hanging off on the side of the building, sort of working on their facades.
Mm-hmm.
The idea loosely was that those scarecrows got sort of influenced by what our hero was doing, and then they're sort of enlisted in sort of helping him develop that idea. So now you're sort of joining the ranks of the scarecrow and going off to help him create his better world, if you will.
Now, I've noticed that in creative projects in general, there are different phases, right? There's the initial concept, and then you start blocking out some things, and then it seems kind of nebulous, like, oh, what is this thing going to be? And then eventually there's momentum, and you get to the point where it's like, it's alive! You know, I had to throw that in, sorry, but that is another point for me. But how do you keep the momentum going, especially when it is where we're talking like 2 years? That's longer than some films are in production. So how do you keep the artists inspired? How do you keep people going forward?
Well, I have to say, working on like the Chipotle project is it allows you to scratch the itch much sooner than, let's say, in a feature film, which you could be involved in a project for a decade, you know, sometimes 4 years. But for a studio like ours, you know, it's very satisfying for the small team that we have to be able to, you know, to consummate an idea, to prepare for the birth of the idea, witness the birth. And then the best part is when you roll the baby into the viewing room and everybody's there with their face pressed up against the glass, you know, going, oh, my gosh, look how beautiful the baby is. That's the part where you're a proud parent and then it makes you want to go have more. So it's like for us, it's. That to be able to go through that process almost in the same time as like a 9 month to the delivery was very similar to how we went through on this Chipotle and other projects we've done in the past. So that's definitely the wind in our sails that allows us to scratch that itch sooner. And that moment of it's alive is definitely the steam you need when you're about to run out, you know?
How do you all handle critiques? Is it similar to what Pixar does where they have everyone in a room and they evaluate it and talk about it, or is it more private one-on-one discussions?
If I could, I could kind of point to that. When I first came to the studio, one of the things that I thought was brilliant and was really impressed with was our weekly reviews. We do a review on Friday where we share all the work that's being produced to the entire studio. And everyone is open to give an opinion, give notes. And we track those notes and we look into them. And that was, it was wonderful to see how articulate everybody was about the ideas and things that bubble up in that discussion help the process along. It's a very open sort of collaborative spirit. We encourage everyone to sort of check their egos at the door and talk about the work, because that's what's important. This isn't about, you know, just what I'm doing, but rather what we're all trying to do here as a creative company.
Half of our employees have gone to the same school, Ringling College of Art, and a lot of them came from the illustration department. And illustrations, specifically the illustration department at Ringling, is all about critique.
Yeah.
You're right there, lined up, ready to be taken out by the bullets. And it allows you to become stronger, to not only to accept critique, but you to then see the end result. And the point of critique is to make the work better. It is a sacred space for us, our theater, where we look at everyone's work and talk about it. And we know that the project's going to be better for it after that hour or two is over on Friday after we've looked at the work, we know that we're going to walk out of there with something better than we walked in there with.
Plus, it's also a great learning tool. I think it's for the younger artists, it's good for them to learn how to articulate the intention behind what they're doing, pitch their ideas and understand, you know, so just kind of put it out there, but also find a way to talk about it intelligently so that their thoughts come across. And I think that's sort of part of the process.
As co-directors, how do you all handle the divide of work?
In the story process, the narrative building, the storyboarding and conceptual phase, it's one-on-one together. A lot of just sitting in the same room and hashing out ideas on paper. We'll do a lot of drawings. I mean, we go through sketches, gosh, stacks of them. And that's really where we really find what makes the most sense. Once it sort of set on the tracks and we feel really good and strong about that and get sort of sign off from the studio and other people, then we sort of start to split up a little bit. But it's usually a very organic thing where it's back and forth between Brandon and myself.
I think part of the secret sauce for having a good collaborative co-directing experience is for the co-directors, from our experience, is that we make sure that we're on the same page and we can never communicate enough. And it's important because it's more of a parental sort of approach to direction.
That's
in the sense that mom needs to be on the same page as dad before the proper communication happens with the child. So for us, if we're not on the same page, then it's not good, obviously. But it's always good to have the checks and balance and the pros and cons and the devil's advocate role always being played with each other. But there's the respect of that. And at the end of the day, there's always something going on. There's a lot to handle. And with a project like this that had a gaming component and then also eventually all of the marketing components, it's too much for one director. And it was very helpful to be able to divide and conquer with Limber and the rest of the team to be able to tackle everything that needed to happen.
There were days where I'd go off and just go live in game land for a while, and Brandon would check in on the film, and then we'd switch off a little bit. And it seemed to work that way.
All right. Well, just two more questions if you have the time here. We have the tax rebates that have been helping at least the film community here in Baton Rouge to grow and be viable. And there are also the digital media rebates. I was wondering if those affect you all. Is that something that's been positive for you all or not so much?
Certainly they're positive. Yeah, I don't think this company would exist without that jumpstart. Which was needed at the very beginning for what happened with our first short film. We needed to have the support and the confidence going into such a lofty investment as what we did for Morse Less More. Even for us, even though we just in general are a very frugal, talented group here, it costs a lot of money to turn around 15 seconds of animation, let alone something as dynamic as taking on a large project with Chipotle and CAA. I think what's critical to realize is that it wasn't just Louisiana Economic Development. It was also Fast Start, which was very helpful for the expansion of our company moving into interactive.
For those who don't know, Louisiana Economic Development, or LED, is the government organization here in Louisiana who helps administer the tax credits for films, for digital media companies. And their program, Fast Start, is a program that helps companies get up to speed in new ventures. They provide support, training, and other resources.
What's awesome about LED is just, you know, to be able to have not only the financial sort of bonus of having access to credits, but it's also the fact that there's the company, the group LED themselves, and how much they love to share with the rest of the world what we're creating from a PR standpoint, which I think is of equal value.
Yeah, I think you all are definitely one of the success stories because it's not just about a production outside of the state coming in, doing a shoot, and then moving out. You all are a company here in Louisiana making original content. Again, really encouraging to see that. All right, last question. Let's say another ideal collaborator out there, like Chipotle, is listening. What do you want them to know to get the best out of Moonbot Studios?
Wow, that's a good one. That is a really good one. I'll just dive in here. We have intentions of making sure that every project we take on, that we get to bring to the table our storytelling chops and to tell a compelling narrative. But on top of that, we want to make sure that we're, from the medium side, that we find opportunities to innovate new ways of telling the story, whether like with what's recently just happened with Sony PlayStation, and they brought us this new technology through their Wonder Book, which is an augmented reality book app. And we're done with that project, and it comes out here in the States in the middle of November. And it's called Diggs Nightcrawler. That's another example of like, we want you to do your thing, tell a great story, but here is also a new technology. We want you to play with it. That was exactly what we wanted. But I think if there was a company out there wanting to collaborate, I would also like to think that they're wanting us to dive into a medium, maybe like that's something that maybe they haven't seen us even do yet, quite yet, like theater, for example.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
If there's a client out there that wants to work with, if their brief is flexible and open enough for them to take the journey with us on discovering something great that makes sense for that project, I think that's the invitation. It's a little harder when they've got a pre-prescribed idea and it's like, hey, do Morris for us. Then that doesn't quite work because there's no discovery there. So I think the invitation should come with like, hey, if you guys are flexible enough to take this journey with us, then let's talk.
Yeah.
Well, terrific. Thanks so much for taking the small journey here with me today. I really, really appreciate it. If people want to learn more about you all, there's obviously moonbotstudios.com, but do you all have other sites that you want to mention?
Sure. There's morrislessmore.com, numberlies.com. There's also the scarecrowgame.com, guardiansofchildhood.com. There's a lot of .com, sorry.
Are you all on Twitter?
Sure. Follow us on Twitter, Moonbot Studios.
There's at Moonbot Studios, there's at Brandon Bot, and then there's at Limbert. Continue dialogue there.
Okay, excellent. Well, we'll include those details in the show notes. All right, you all, thanks again. I'm really very honored to talk to you all. You all take care and have a happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you guys.
All right, bye now. All right, everyone, that's our show. Those guys were great. I really enjoyed talking to them. I would encourage you all to go and check out both of the videos. The Scarecrow video, that one's only about 3 minutes, as we said. You can find that on YouTube. I would also recommend Morris Lessmore. That one's on iTunes and probably elsewhere. It's about 15 minutes, so it's a little longer. But what a stunning piece of work. And they're doing so many smart things. We talked about it a little bit. There's so much more that is just beyond what we can describe. Just two more things to watch for in Morris Lessmore. First, note how the seasons change. It happens in a subtle way, but lots of time is encompassed there. Secondly, isn't it interesting that Humpty Dumpty is the character who guides Morris Lessmore? Humpty Dumpty, as you remember, is the fabled nursery rhyme character who took a great fall. So it seems appropriate that he would be the one who would guide Morris Lessmore through his adventures in that other world. Appropriate, since Morris himself took a kind of fall, metaphorical or not, at the beginning that brought him to the other world. So kind of neat how that works out. Now, wise men have asked, who cannot be crushed by a plot? By the end of Morris Lessmore, I don't think it's inappropriate to ask, who cannot be saved by a plot? Anyway, lots to think about in that short. And I just wanted to point it out because animation sometimes gets treated as something childish, childlike, and there certainly is that childlike wonder to it. But it can also discuss big ideas. It can also be nourishing to adults as well as to young people. And in cases like Morris Lessmore, there's enough substance to discuss it in a way that you might a great work of literature in English class. Speaking of doing work for adults, at one point, Moonbot was working with Guillermo del Toro to put together a production of Gollum. Now, I didn't get a chance to ask the guys about it. It may not be in development still, but it's an example of the kind of big, bold storytelling kinds of things that they want to do. And I'm sure that they will be doing those kind of projects in the near future. I have no doubt that in a few years, Moonbot will have the same kind of prominence that companies like Pixar or Leica have, because they're doing their own thing, they have that special something in their productions. And I think a big part of that comes from their willingness to explore the things that are of interest to them, not just saying, well, this is what we've got to do to be like everyone else. They take value in exploring their own interest and encouraging their employees to do the same thing. And I think that's where you get something special that goes beyond just a mere technical achievement. In closing, I wanted to touch on one of the things that Brandon mentioned about how helpful, how critical even, the tax rebates were to getting his company up and running. What's the point of mentioning that, you ask? Well, when we are trying to collaborate and do big things, sometimes we need others to take a chance on us. It's not so much a handout, it's the government taking a risk alongside of some of the people who are involved in these productions or involved in trying to make a company. It might be a business venture instead. It might be private investors saying that. It might be the community saying, we want to support you. But it is something that has to happen in a lot of these big ventures. Other people need to believe in it. Other people need to take action to support it, to take a risk alongside of the people involved. Otherwise, companies like Moonbot might not happen. That means less revenue, less jobs, less of a cultural impact. So when you have the chance, when you come across people, across businesses or organizations doing big things, taking big risks, find a way to support them. On that note, I want to take the time to say thank you. Thank you so much for supporting our show. We've gotten some nice comments, some ratings, so thank you for that. If you appreciate the show, would you take a moment to go on iTunes, leave a quick rating or a comment, just a few seconds of your time to say thanks. It does help us get the word out. Do you have questions for us, comments you'd like to share, ideas for future shows? How about you shoot us an email? The email for the show is podcast@ncivitis.com. If you're on Twitter, you can find me at ncivitispro. So look for me, say hello. Would be great to have a conversation on there. Thanks to Rob Coslow for providing the song True Gemini. Until next time, let's make our future collaborations be better collaborations.
I want to say, have yourself a spooky Halloween.